Blog Talk Radio.
Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training center in Denver, Colorado, presents Mush, You Huskies, a show about dog-powered sports and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Mush, You Huskies, is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Here's your host, Dr. Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto. I'm here with my co-host, Michelle. Michelle, how are you?
I'm great. I'm really looking forward to today's interview with Hugh Neff.
This is our last Iditarod show of the season, and I'm very honored and pleasured to have on good friend Hugh Neff. Hugh, are you there?
Yeah, how you guys doing?
We're doing good. How is Nome, Alaska?
It's been beautiful the last couple days. Been in the 30s, sunny. This is Mardi Gras, part of the Iditarod, where all the bunch of people just going out and having a fun time, enjoying Nome. You know, it's a very unique place up here, and really
yeah, I'm looking forward to coming up there one of these times and hanging out with you guys as well. So tell our listeners out there about your race this year. I know you're a top 10 finisher and you've had much success from last year. I know I'm sure it's bittersweet, but tell us about your race a little bit.
Yeah, it's nice to finish in the Iditarod top 10 for the first time and not really feel that great about it. I think that, you know, obviously part of the number six, team sort of hit a wall there, maybe right after, you know, with Bruce, check through it somewhere there. I tried to stay up with the front runners and a bit too long of runs where I should have probably stayed on a shorter run rest schedule. And it caught me in the end there, and we slowed down quite a bit towards the end. But still had a good run, had a really young team this year. I had 4 2-year-olds. 4 3-year-olds, and the two like, sort of plug-in last-minute edition dogs. With the older dogs, and they didn't really last more than a few hundred miles, Mahusas and Zodiac. But they still did, you know, their best, and that's what it, really this whole race is about. For me, it was, you know, coming from Chicago, it was like going to school, like every year. For me, it's an education just being out there. Was, you know, I'm out there to trail numerous checkpoints, and it's just Jeff Davis, myself, and that Lance character, Maggie. So for me to be out there on the trail and to not really be intimidated at all anymore by these guys makes me realize that I actually have good. It doesn't show in the standings, not in the final, you know, trophy hunt or whatever, but I do realize that I'm getting closer to the overall goal, which is, you know, to realize my potential. And right now, like I've been telling everybody, I think I'm like the Bodie Miller of dog rushing. I really haven't found my overall niche. And I think it'd be best for not only me, but for the sport if I get to that point here sooner or later, because I know a lot of people are hoping that I do well. And I'm not just racing for myself. Obviously, we race for the dogs, and it's all about taking care of them. But a lot of kids out there and people all over the country that are wishing me well. So hopefully one of these years I can put a smile on everybody's face.
You know who, I think you're doing that already, and I was following your progress on Facebook as you're going, and so many people are excited to have you finish up there in that top 10. But you know what? Most of those kids would have been just fine with you finishing with the Red Lantern, don't you think?
Yeah, you would hope so, but, you know, the way marketing is on TV and sports in America, that's something I think we need to focus more on is, it's like Bud Smith, he's the father of the Smith brothers, Randy and Sim, very famous older Iditarod original. He points out to his boys every year, just remember it isn't what place you finish, it's about the journey. And that's one thing I always try to focus on as well as, yeah, it's competition. But there are certain mushers that are all about competition and it's not about the journey. And for those folks, you feel sorry.
Right.
The one person who is the most about the journey and not about what coaches, and since you guys wouldn't probably understand this, I mean, maybe you do, is Lance Mackey. I've been out with that guy in numerous races where he's just out there enjoying life. He's out there with his headlamp, checking out all the trails, trying to see what type of games around, and, being a goofball with his dog. And for him, he always says that what place he finishes is ice.
Right, right.
And, that's one thing I'm learning as well. It's all about loving up the dog, you know. It's all about what I call the energy. And if you're feeling good, you're taking care of your dogs, they're going to be feeling good, you're going to be doing well.
Right.
For me, though, it's definitely a issue I have to deal with the coast of Alaska. The coast is a very formidable area on the dog psychologically. You know, no trees, so almost like being on the moving places.
Isn't that where you slowed down quite a bit last year as well?
I'm telling you, it's something I'm almost thinking about, you know, flying out here beforehand and just training out to do this year somewhere.
Right.
Just to get not only the dogs more comfortable, but myself as well. It's really not too difficult to train, but it's later into the race, the dogs are a little bit more pooped out, and it's obviously the wind can be really rough. Except this year, it wasn't that bad at all. This year, everybody...
There's been a lot of records broke this year. The fastest Siberian time, the fastest Red Lantern. Lance almost beat the record of all time. So what do you think about this year's race in general compared to, you know, when you and I were talking up at Anchorage, you and I spent some time together and we talked about, you know, a little bit of people's strategy and stuff. So what do you think about the race in general, how it was handled and things like that?
The players that I figured were going to be up there were up there. Money does influence the sport, not for all of us, but like, say, Jeff King, you know, the guy's doing quite well, and it shows in his dogs, and his dogs are like, you know, the greatest animals in the world. They got their own special chambers, with, you know, for athletes, like football players, and perhaps, you know, Denver has them, that advantage over other athletes with the oxygen.
Right.
And his dogs are really amazing to watch them out there. And Lance actually had that issue as well with his chemo, with his cancer. And he's saying, you know, it's definitely an advantage, and I think you might even know a bit about this, but that oxygen in the system of the dogs that makes them a stronger animal overall in the long run. But for some reason, that doesn't last for the whole 8 or 9 days of the Iditarod. I guess dogs are usually pretty amazing for about 4 or 5 and they sort of wind down a little bit. That being the result of folks like Lance, myself, John Baker, maybe Jeb Hart, some of us who tend to do a bit longer runs, I don't think the sprintier dogs really kind of after the 6-7 hour period, if we do like a 9 to 10 hour run, those last couple hours, I think they can't handle it as much psychologically. That's
right.
Why Lance will tell you, and I agree, a lot of us don't train for speed anymore. We train for, I call it meat and feet. Lance calls it attitude and appetite. It's all about, you want a more stocky, durable, what I call hard-to-win animal compared to, you know, back maybe 10 years ago, the field was all about speed and swingy and bruiser and that whole crowd. But now we're looking for doesn't need as much recovery time because we're not going as fast.
Right.
And because we're not going as fast, it's less stress on the dog's body. So that is a larger team towards the end of these events, and because of that, your patience is going to diminish too much. My issues this year were a lot of the dogs I was dropping towards the end were all the 2-year-olds, And some of these two-year-olds, believe it or not, did the UConn quest as well. But psychologically, they weren't, you know, hurt or anything. They were just psychologically tired. And when a dog starts looking back at you, if they're not being forward-oriented, like Mitch Stevens I was talking about, then it's probably best for you to drop that dog at the next checkpoint.
Right.
Maybe your listeners are a little blown away thinking, you know, these guys are running these two-year-old animals at such a long pace and everything. But you've been up here. You understand, Robert. The dogs up here aren't exactly, you know, your typical house potato dogs.
Right.
Our dogs, you know how we discipline our dogs? We leave them home. We don't let them run.
Mm-hmm.
Our dogs are all about exercise and more than just, it isn't the exercise, they're all about investigating and getting out in the woods and being animals. And we're just the lucky humans to get to, you know, go out there and play with them.
Well, you know, everybody's proud of you, Hugh. I know all of your teacher friends are very excited about your upcoming tour that you're going to do. Do you want to tell people about that a little bit? We have a lot of people listening all over the country, and they want to be able to find access. So what's going on in the next couple of months, starting in the spring?
I've been doing this now for, 10 years now, and as far as, school tours go, that was the biggest part about this year's race is I got tied in with the National Education Association through Facebook, you know, which is really the next big mushroom world to everybody. And they actually asked me to carry the Cat in the Hat book to promote children's music, not only in Alaska, but all over the country, or the world. And so I carried the book and did a lot of photo ops and stuff along the way, Utah, Anchorage. And through reading, that's how I came up to Alaska, you know. My dad had hundreds of books in the house back in Chicago, and I got a hold of some books by Jack Wander and, you know, James Missioner, and then all about the North and Alaska and adventure. That's what brought me up north in the first place. I didn't even know what dog mushroom was when I came to Alaska. I was really came for Alaska. I just loved seeing the food that we have up there. And so the tours we do are basically fly into Chicago, visit with relatives, and then I rent a vehicle and I travel all around the Midwest, East Coast, and South Eastern part of the lower coast, U.S., the States, whatever you guys want to call it. In May, for about 3 weeks, I usually do Denver, Texas, Washington, the western side of the States in September. But yeah, I'll be in May. They can contact me through Facebook or through our website. The special thing about this year, which I'm really looking forward to, is not only am I doing the talks in May, but I've actually been invited to go to Cape Town, South Africa, and do dog mushroom talk there. So that's going to be pretty neat. And for me, you know, racing's fun and everything, but I use dog mushroom as a way to help others do their group as well. And you guys, I was a little bit late for this talk I gave to you guys in Denver recently, but I hope you got a gist for the passion that I have for what I do and for, what I think dog mushroom should be about. It's a fun, competitive environment, but we should also realize how lucky we are to do what we do. And to always stay focused on why Joe Reddington started the FBI in the first place.
Yeah, that's right. You know, there has to be more to it than just going out there and trying to collect a check, you know?
Oh, and it's sad, man. And it's been in the papers a little bit. There's a lot of politicians and they're trying to decide whether the Iditarod is a sport where we're comparable to year-round professional football players, basketball players, whatever, or are we just an event? That was created in the early 70s to help celebrate the Alaskan lifestyle. And there's definitely some, well-known, fairly powerful people that are trying to make the Iditarod into something that perhaps I think they're letting the water be seen and a lot of us really don't think it should be. I think it should just be what it is.
Yeah.
Trying to compare it to another sport is not, there isn't nothing like the other drug.
There isn't. So what about everybody that's calling it quits this year? A lot of talk about that. What's in your plans?
I'm embarrassed for these people. Dude, I will, Robert, I'll never retire. I might not, be racing all the time. Joe Reddington was doing his race in his late 70s, early 80s. He came in fifth place out of 60 teams when he was 77 years old.
Yeah.
I look at these people, and if you want to retire, I was talking with Howard for many of mine. It's really great that you're in. I mean, I should tell everybody they were two Eddie Grant champions this year. Hans's team was just beautiful. And I'm like, Hans, if you get them retired, please just don't go up on stage and, bum everybody out with your sob story. And he said, don't worry about that. See, when I go, I'm disappearing. And that's the way, I think if you're going to retire, do it quietly. It's an economical deal in these times, but for me personally, I could not survive civilized normal society, not being able to run those. I couldn't handle it. I have to exploit psychologically just for my own well-being.
That's how I feel too, and I'm just itching to do it. I know you and I have talked about this a long time, but I was on the back of a sled, not to your caliber, but to my own caliber for so many years. I'm just dying to get back on top of that and be ready to go.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's just sometimes, the back hairs on your neck sort of stiffen up and you get all, you're looking, I was coming over a horizon, over a valley that's 50 miles wide and a bunch of, I'm going to do cops to do public 440 here in a couple of weeks, and up there it's pretty neat because you see a lot of caribou or reindeer running around, and it's like being in a big National Geographic magazine or something. There are some lonely, cold, fairly boring times where you need a lot of patience,
Mm-hmm.
You can't really, but a lot of the time, you just, your mouth is just open in awe of all that you're seeing, especially when you're a Northern Lights rally. It seems like it's almost prettier at night when it starts out. But this year was a very dark year for the Quest and I could rock. We never came down the moon at all. So I'm looking forward to getting out there and mushing with the moon out for once. It's been a dark winter up here.
There you go. So the banquet's tonight.
I have faith in you that you'll be up here doing racing if your missus allows it.
His missus just has to sell enough dog training to get him up there.
That's what we're working on. And when I came back from Anchorage, we talked a little bit, and I know you and I talked a bit before I left. And once things calm down, I'll give you a call and see what's next.
Yeah, a lot of it, I know you've got the passion for it, but besides the passion, it's just an overall daily dedication to, get the mundane sort of, non-thinking work, which you would think doesn't mean a lot, like keeping poop and scratching bellies and all that sort of stuff, but the best mushers are the ones that spend the most time in the dog yard. It ain't the guy with all the money that's just, doing all the work. The folks that are doing the day in, day out chores, because that's where the bond is at.
That's exactly right. So, Hugh, the banquet is tonight. What happens there? For people that don't know about that, that's kind of the accumulation of this dang near 2.5-week event. What happens at this banquet in Nome?
It's a long banquet, totally different from the opening banquet. We just go up there and grab our numbers. And, do our draw and get off stage, where this banquet is all about the stories and all the craziness that happened on the trail. I'll give you one story from the first race. It was pretty amazing, actually. My buddy Alan Moore, who's Allie Zirkle's husband, was going from Nikolai to McGrath there, fairly flat stretch of trail on the river, and all of a sudden, our dog team comes flying by him, and there's nobody on the sled of the person that's fallen off. The person had been working on the dog and the dog, and the person had tried to get the dog. It was loose. While that happened, the team coach pulled the hook. A younger rookie bunch. But all worked out okay. But the amazing part was, just imagine, so Alan Moore's on his sled. Another dog team comes flying by. Alan Moore grabs the snow hook from his sled, has it in his hand, jumps from his sled into the middle of the other dog team to save those dogs. And so once he gets in the middle of those other dog teams, he takes his snow hook from his dog team, puts it in the ground to stop his team, then he takes control of the other dog team. We're talking, you know, 12, 14 dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So he secures his dog team off, and the other dog team turns around and goes back to the dog team and stays shut down. That's one of those special stories that you'll hear from those banquets. There's lots of them. You know, these banquets can be really long. I'm talking 7-8 hours, but it's really good food.
So, are you heading home after that, or what's next?
Oh no, I got two more races we got going on. We got a race in Port Huron on the 25th. A race that I started for the with my buddy Josh Cadzo, which started a race up there for try to get more Athabascan Indian villagers into longer distance races. So that's called the Port Huron 400. And then on April 8th, I got the big race that we'll be going up to in Altitude, which is just north of here. And that's called the Kobuk 440. And these are basically the races, but as much as training up younger dogs than other people. So we'll do that and then get organized here for our school tour in May. And, you know, it's a lot of travel, but I really love what I do, and I'm just thankful that I'm so lucky to be on this journey that I am.
There you go. So I know a lot of people follow Annie. How is she doing now?
Oh, you guys really want to know, Doctor?
We need to know.
Okay, well, if there's any parents of children listening, maybe you need to take them away from the radio right now. So Annie, we've been breeding up the last 2 days with one of Hans Gott's main leaders.
There you go.
She's a happy little girl.
So Annie's legacy should continue on then.
Oh yeah, believe me, it's going to continue.
There you go.
But that's what the comical part about the end of the Iditarod. We're racing against each other, but when you get to the dog yard here in Nome, there's about a couple hundred dogs, you know, and then it's right next to the convention center so people can wander over and check out all the different teams and everything. A lot of the mushers were making deals with each other to get each other's breeding lines. So we made a bit of a deal with Hans, and we're looking forward to having some Hans Gott dogs, because he doesn't get talked about like Lance does. You know, Lance is in another world. But for all of us that are on the trail, I personally think Hans is the best dog in the world. They're just beautiful animals. And if guys like he or Jeff or whoever, if they're not going to be around in the future, I'm just glad that I had a few years to learn from, you know, them, because they really are at the top of their games right now.
There you go. So, Hugh, what do you want to close with?
I just want to, you know, I want to invite everybody, wherever you are in the country, to, you know, times are tough economically, but if you want something to happen, make it happen. And believe it or not, when I moved up to Alaska, I only had $200 in my name, and I didn't know anybody. But I wanted to, you know, not only be a musher, but be a good Alaskan. And I've had a lot of trials and, you know, difficulties over the years, but like Jesse Jackson says, you got to keep hope alive. And I think somebody like you, Robert, or anybody out there wants to do a dog mushroom race or come up and just visit Alaska, you just got to figure a way to do it and just make it happen.
There you go.
It's going to be easy. It might not, you know, happen right away, but you just got to believe.
That's right. So, Hugh, take care, buddy. We'll talk soon. Get some rest when you can after your racing, because Those kids need you when you come to those talks, I'm sure, all right?
All right, and thanks, Robert, for letting me do this, and hopefully we'll have you on the runners here soon.
There you go. Take care. That's Hugh Neff, Iditarod finisher and champion to kids throughout the country. You can listen to his show anytime on mushingradio.com or through our website at denverdogworks.com. We're going to finish up our mushing recap in just a few minutes, and I do want to personally thank Hugh and his partner Tamara for the generous hospitality that they gave us when I was up there in Anchorage. We'll be right back.
Team Ineke is a professional Siberian Husky racing team located in Denver, Colorado and Duluth, Minnesota. Dr. Robert Forto and his team are training for their first Iditarod run in 2013. Team Ineke is seeking corporate and individual sponsors. For more information, visit our website at teamineke.com. That's TEAMINEKA.com. Let's get back to the show. Must you Huskies? Gee-haw!
Back on Must You Huskies. I am here with my co-host and business partner, Michelle. Michelle, how are you?
And still your wife. I'm doing great.
We just had an excellent interview with Hugh Neff. For all of those guys that are listening to this show, we were talking on, I believe, a cell phone. So if it sounds a little crackly at the beginning, that's because of the connection. We're using Skype and he's using a regular phone. So just bear with it because it's an awesome interview with Must You Huskies and Hugh Neff.
I think everybody will understand he was in Nome, and we are calling from Denver. So, you know, even with technology the way that it is, it's pretty spread out, and it's absolutely amazing and cool that we were able to talk to him live on a radio show that's being recorded for the Internet via a new concept called Skype. So pretty cool.
There you go. So what do you want to finish with in our Iditarod recap? We have beat it into the ground about who won the race, but do you have anything special for us to end this show?
Yeah, I'd like you to talk about the Red Lantern, the significance of that position, and this year's Red Lantern Award winner is Celeste Davis, and Celeste is a rookie out of Deer Lodge, Montana, and she was bib number 58, and she came in 55th. And yesterday, or the day before, whenever we last were on, there were 56 mushers, and a musher, John Stewart, out of Aberdeen, Scotland, he had to scratch in White Mountain. So he was 77 miles from Nome when he had to scratch. I hope all of his dogs and himself are safe and sound.
Yeah, I do too. So the Red Lantern is an award that they give to the last musher into Nome, and there's a lot of history behind that, and you can find out all about the stories on the Internet. But from what I know, they hang a Red Lantern out by the arch in Nome, and the person that and it stays lit until the last person out in the field crosses underneath that arch, and then they win the Red Lantern Award.
Right, and this year Celeste actually set a record for the Red Lantern holder by coming in the quickest.
Yeah, she was the quickest Red Lantern Award winner in Iditarod history, and there's been a lot of records broken in this year's Iditarod. Lance Mackey almost beat the fastest finish record. Blake Freaking, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, finished the fastest record time for Siberians, and of course Celeste finished the quickest as the last musher.
Right, and you know what Hugh was saying was that the trail this year was pretty cold, which I know it was always better to be on a cold trail than a warm trail because the snow is a lot faster.
In my days of running dogs, I always found that the dogs ran much better the colder it is. And I remember running up in northern Minnesota. If it was below zero, the dogs just absolutely loved it. But if it was anything above zero, they were really struggling.
Right. Is it because of the heat or is it because of the exercise or a combination of both?
It's a combination of both. It's how Mother Nature takes care of the dogs and, of course, takes care of itself. And the better the dog, of course, the better the condition, the better the dog. So with that, I think that all of the mushers out there on this year's trail enjoyed the fast pace, and you can obviously see with some of these records that were broken.
Absolutely. And one more thing that we need to point out for sure for all the naysayers out there and the people that are against this race and how the dogs are treated, this is the first year in history of the Iditarod that no dogs died.
There you go. And that's a special thing, too, because this is a sport all about the dogs. And we talked a lot about that on our other show, the Dog Doctor Radio Show, just yesterday about dogs need heroes, too. But this race truly is about the dogs and how well they're cared for, and Hugh hit it right on the spot when he said that you got to get out there and you got to do it. It's the bond that you have with your dogs is what's going to take you to Nome.
That's right, and you have to understand something about the dogs themselves. This is what they were bred to do. This is what they love to do. They love to be out there running and pulling, and not just running alone. They enjoy it more with their comrades, that, you know, put them up on a team and they're having a blast.
As Hugh said, the way he disciplines his dogs is they don't get to go on races.
We used to do the same thing. I used to remember that if you got in a fight in the kennel, you didn't run the next day.
There you go. So you have been listening to Mush You Huskies, our 18-day Iditarod report. We will be back 2 weeks from this past Saturday, and we will have our biweekly show at that point. We're trying to line up some guests and interesting topics to keep this a year-long radio show. So just follow us on mushingradio.com. Yes, Michelle?
You know, I would really like to say that our good friend Leah has been writing a blog for us about raw diets, and I think that the musher's diet needs to be incorporated into our show, both for the actual musher and for the dogs, because what in the heck do you guys eat out there that doesn't freeze? That's what I'm interested in. So I think that should be one of our topics coming up here pretty soon.
We'll find a mushing expert out there that can talk about what he feeds his dogs. It's quite a bit across the board on what those guys feed. So we will get somebody on that can share that. And we are going to talk a little bit about urban mushing in a few weeks, where we're going to get some carts out and some dogs and teach people here in Denver what mushing is all about. We're going to have some symposiums here at Denver Dog Works about dog sledding and break out all the equipment and really introduce people to this sport because there isn't enough awareness about that. And as Hugh Neff was saying, we need to do what the founders of this race wanted it to be, and that is to be, you know, a race for the dogs.
Yeah, a race for the dogs, a race for the history of Alaska, and a race for the history of America.
There you go. So you've been listening to Mush You Huskies. Give us a call at 303-752-2818 if you have any questions, or just follow us on any of those websites. You can just find us on Google at Team Aneke or DenverDogWorks.com. My name is Robert Forto, and I'm here with my co-host, Michelle. Never forget your dreams. We'll see you soon. Goodbye.